SBS Radio.
I'm joined by Jamie Lowe, CEO of the National Native Title Council, in the sidelines of the First Nations Clean Energy Symposium 2022. Jamie, welcome to NITV Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Incredibly important conversation to get the mob together, industry, to send a message to government that, you know, we've got solutions that you guys are after for.
Now, clean energy is something that everyone's talking about with the inflation going on, prices are going up, and everyone is just thinking about the energy price drives virtually everything. What we're talking about today is clean energy, and the First Nations people have to be part of the conversation of this clean energy transition.
Yeah, you're right. So, you know, we've been listening acutely to the conversations around clean energy over, you know, whether it be, you know, the last 5 years, but particularly the last 12 months. And something that was profound to me is that there wasn't a whole lot of First Nations voices being heard in regards to this. But what we know will happen, and when clean energy projects start to get stood up in various different kind of jurisdictions and communities, is that they'll come knocking on our door and asking for access to our land. And the issue with that is that we don't have a whole lot of power to say no to these proponents. And so we, part of the conversation over the next couple of days, will be talking about us being empowered to be at the front of the bus rather than the back, and being a passive participant in the economies of that take place on our country. We know that's happened within the kind of resource sector for, you know, over 200 years in this country, and, you know, things need to change. And, you know, that's one of the messages that we'll be driving over the next couple of days.
And there's, when we're talking about clean energy and this transition, and then the land rights, because this is a part of the Native Title Council's, one of the areas that you work in, you specialize in, you develop with the communities and government, there's often a clash between the interests of the communities and the investors. So can you tell us a bit how clean energy transition and land rights will be actually come together and benefit the community?
Well, I think that we need to be in a position of authority and power of what takes place, whether it be clean energy or other projects that take place on our country, yeah? And so people speak about there being a clash. It doesn't need to be a clash. It doesn't need to be this kind of... the relationship doesn't need to be, I guess, from the beginning. If you can't say no to something, the relationship kind of has this kind of power imbalance from the beginning, yeah? And so if there's a situation where we can... Hang on a second, we're saying no to you guys, but, you know, unless you kind of reach a standard of actually doing business with us on a level of equals, and if the other industry over there, if they're doing a better job than you, we might say to those guys. So being able to kind of say yes and no is kind of critical to this conversation.
And one of the speakers in the event said that First Nations people actually control between a third and half of the landmass in Australia. So it's extremely important to have them taking part in the conversation and lead the project, I believe.
Well, Native Title resides over 40% of Australia's landmass. That's a big chunk of Australia, yeah? And over the next decade, Native Title alone will grow to around 50% of title over the land. You've seen some jurisdictions, particularly, you know, WA and Northern Territory and even Queensland, they're the big kind of mining states, you could say, is that it's even bigger than that. So I can't remember what the number is in WA, but it's well over 40% of the land mass within WA has some sort of Aboriginal title over it, yeah? And so the conversation we're having, well, so what? So if you can't, if it's Native Title and within the legislation, the highest bar is a right to negotiate, that needs to be shifted, yeah? So the proponent comes onto your door, says, you know, we've got a mining tenement, you know, we're going to mine your country. Okay, then the triggers in the negotiation process, you are. That's where the imbalance lies, yeah? All this land, that's kind of the so what, if we've got, if we want sovereignty over our land, we're talking about treaty here in Victoria and other jurisdictions, you know, we need to be empowered to, as I say, I kept on looping back, saying what does and doesn't happen on our country. Our mob's not opposed to development, we just want to be part of the commerce conversation. The economy, we speak about culture, the commerce, the culture of commerce that's happening in our country today needs shifting. You know, we need to be able to kind of be part of the wealth conversation within this country as well.
And we've had input in this symposium from participants from right across the world, First Nations people from the US and Canada. And it appears that Canada is ahead in many areas in terms of this transition.
Well, it's not surprising that they're ahead. They do, they're ahead in a number of I guess areas as far as the First Nations relations over off the shores. Even you look at New Zealand, Canada, even the US, they all have treaties in place, various different degrees of treaties, but even that puts you in a position of authority and power. You know, part of the money conversation, raising capital, we're having that conversation today, where's our capital to be able to kind of be part of this, the economic conversation or the growth and potential that's happening within Australia. So I'm passionate about treaties. I'm part of the First Peoples Assembly here in Victoria and driving significant change and raising the bar of how I guess governments deal with First Nations people within this country, which is critical. So we always look with envy across the shores to First Nations people, Canada, US and New Zealand. We learn from them, and I guess what we do have is a little bit of hindsight, so when these new kind of agreements, treaties taking place in Australia, we can learn from them all over there and kind of, you know, improve lives for our own people over here.
Coming back to mining, you mentioned in your intervention, you spoke about growing up in Ballarat, which was actually said that it was one of the richest towns in the world, not just Australia, in the 1800s, and wealth was built on mining. But again, the mining is happening, but not benefiting the First Nations people, because you mentioned that now. Well, the mining has transitioned from central Victoria, and it's the western states and northern states that are actually booming nowadays, but not benefiting the First Nations people.
So something needs to change, yeah? Australia is a wealthy country. We know back in the mid-1800s when, you know, the gold boom was happening here in Australia and people were coming from all over the world, literally, to look for gold. It was a thing back then. And, you know, there's a lot of old money left in Ballarat. And, you know, even, like I said, Parliament House was built on that wealth here in Victoria, in Melbourne. So there's old money there. There's new money. You look in WA, there's new money. And you look at the Pilbara, I think it's Rio Tinto have somewhere around 70% of their profit comes from the Pilbara region.
And this is a big multinational company that's got operations right across the world.
So their wealth is built from the Pilbara.
And how much do the First Nations people in the area get out of that?
If you look at the social circumstances for First Nations people within Western Australia alone and the wealth that is created within West Australia, it just does not add up. The incarceration rates, the suicide rates, like you can go through the list. The wealthiest jurisdiction within Australia, but some of the poorest First Nations outcomes. So, you know, so you don't have to be kind of, you know, it's not rocket science to say something's not working out there and, you know, needs to do better. And it's as simple as that. And without going into too much detail, what better looks like. But, yeah, we need to do better. And that's on industry, but it's also on, you know, government as well.
Policy and, yeah, something needs to be done. Now, before I let you go, because I know it's a very busy day and you're being really sought after for many other interventions and interviews, I'll just open the mic to you. Anything you'd like to add, maybe a message or maybe something we may have missed that you'd like to add to the conversation?
Only just reiterating that the galvanising of the mob to send clear messages to government is critical. within this year, and that's why we've a strong supporter of these networks, just to bring people together and have the conversation and come up with principles potentially, but also, you know, to convert that to public policy, so that First Nations people are front and centre in this conversation rather than just an afterthought. We've seen the State of Environment report delivered by the Minister Plibersek on Tuesday. It was pretty damning about where we're at in Australia. She spoke about us managing country for over 65,000 years. Surely, you know, something to be learnt from that. And, you know, well, there is. And that's why we're having the conversation.
Jamie Law, CEO of National Native Title Council, thank you very much for joining us on NITV Radio.
Thank you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.